Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com.
Hey y'all. Feminist Apparel is an independent feminist clothing company based right here in Philadelphia. You can shop their amazing collection of sex-positive, consent-promoting, and just overall badass t-shirts, sweatshirts, baby onesies, and even more over at feministapparel.com. That's feminist, F-E-M-I-N-I-S-T, apparel, A-P-P-A-R-E-L.com. And since you know me, you can use the promo code SWT, like Sex with Timmery, at checkout and then save 15% off your order. So go check them out. They support us, so you should support them. Welcome to Sex with Timmery. This is Dr. Timmery. I am super excited to bring back a guest who we have featured previously, but have not gotten to talk to in a while. And a great deal has changed since the last conversation. We have a lot of catching up to do with the lovely Jill McDevitt. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm great. Thanks for asking. Happy to be back.
Yeah. So the last time we had you was the last time you had a new book, and we're bringing you back because you got another one. But many things have changed besides that. So last time we talked, you were living on the East Coast. You were still in grad school at that point, right?
Yes, I was in grad school, still attending Widener's human sexuality program. I was living in Westchester, Pennsylvania, still had my store Feminique running. A lot has changed.
Yeah. So when we first talked, you were running a sex toy store in a town that didn't necessarily get down with that. Now you are in a very different situation. So tell us, how has life changed since we last talked?
It's been great. You know, I felt very out of place in Westchester. I was really trying to, the way I framed it in my blog when I closed was that scene from Back to the Future where, you know, Marty's on stage playing the rock and roll and all the students are holding their ears being like, we're not ready for this. And he's like, well, your kids are going to love it. Yeah. Like I was constantly fighting for every little shred of acknowledging human sexuality in that town. And I was told I had to cover mannequins and I had to cover books and I had to cover words and I had to cover sex toys and I had to cover a heart that they said looked like pubic hair on my logo. And it was just years of battling and battling and battling. And I was like, I'm moving to California. I'm going to live at the beach. Bye. So that's been really good for me personally. And I'm trying to work on the professional side because I didn't think about when you uproot your life and move 3,000 miles away when you're self-employed, you have to really start from scratch. Like, you know, creating a client base to do my sex ed workshops and parties and stuff again and sex toy selling and all that. So that's been tougher. But for me personally, it's been a wonderful transition.
So do you feel like you just had to make a choice just for your own sustainability and like maybe one day you would ever try to come back there, or you're just like, done, deuces?
Done. Done. It's so beautiful. Yeah, I live in San Diego now and it's very beautiful. It fits my lifestyle and it's just kind of, it's a good thing for me. It's definitely a good thing for me.
Do you want to own another brick and mortar again? Does that sound like any fun?
I would love to. I've been really gunning to open a sex and censorship museum with all the things I've collected over the years of my travels and doing the sex ed work that I do. I have all these antique vibrators and all these, you know, old antique vintage lingerie that shows kind of the way that lingerie as with sexual mores have changed over the years. And I just have a lot of cool artifacts and I have a lot of stories to tell. And I would love to open a sex museum, but the rents, the storefront rents here in Southern California are like, I don't even know how I make it happen financially. Yeah. So for now, I'm still doing the in-home and college sex ed classes and then selling online.
So the last time we talked, you had a book out about basically the battle to just even be able to do sex ed and how much of an uphill sort of struggle that is it easier now?
It is a lot easier now, I find. It's come, there's actually budgets for people like me and what I'm trying to do, which is amazing. I used to have to like convince colleges that this was important. And if I could get them to agree to hire me to come give a talk on campus, it would be about condoms or maybe body image. Now, you know, we're talking about rape culture, we're talking about slut shaming, we're talking about orgasms, pleasure, body positivity, all of this stuff. And it's, they have budgets and they have mandates. It's a wonderful thing.
Do you think that that is just simply a difference of geography that's going to be sort of intractable, or is this a progressive wave that hit one place before another one?
I think this is more broad than just a California thing. I think this is just being in this field for 10 years now and starting to see those shifts occur.
Could you give like an example? Like what is different now from when you first got in?
Like when I first got in, with some of the things that I was allowed to say, or just the attitude, it was very much the framework of sex education. So the sex ed framework of health education. So very much about, you know, that late 90s, early 2000s model of sex ed as STI prevention, condoms, proper way to use condoms, just very skills-based pregnancy prevention, and has moved now into more what I call compassion education. They want to know about holistic, you know, ways of being human and, you know, more social justice oriented, definitely talking about more gender identity, talking more about pleasure, and talking more about consent.
Oh, right on.
Than ever before. Yeah.
So there's a new book that you have out now, which is a little bit different. It's a little less about the adversarial components and a little bit more focused on the pleasure part, right?
Yes, it is definitely a change of pace for me because, you know, my I'm comfortable in a space that is more kind of challenging a status quo in the way that we talk about sex. And sometimes that I do forget that people are like, that's great. We're talking about these larger sociocultural quandaries around sex and gender and stuff. But like, I just want to know how to give a blowjob, or I want to say like, how do I like get a great position if, you know, I'm not comfortable with the way my ass looks while I'm having sex, or like these types of very specific technique and in practice sex behavior type questions. And so this book is finally my answer to all those questions over the years of saying, okay, let's talk about the very, you know, actual sex acts.
Yeah. I like it. Mm-hmm. I like it. So yeah. The first one you mentioned was blowjobs. That, I mean, that is a thing that there are, you know, specific workshops on, like, for instance, Sex Nerd Sandra. She, that's one of her bread and butters. This is blowjobs. Mm-hmm. What are some things that you point to for that? Like skills, techniques, that sort of thing.
I have a bunch of positions. So the book is partly positions with these lovely, beautiful, actually illustrations of them depicted in case my verbiage isn't real clear as I describe the positions. So there's a bunch of blowjob positions where it's comfortable and practical. So how to get in a position so that your neck isn't cramped if you're the giver of the blowjob, or how to get into a position that's cozy if you're looking for more intimacy or if you're looking more for more domination. All the positions. And there's also those penile vaginal positions I should mention, as well as oral sex positions, as well as kissing, foreplay. All these different sex acts have their own batch of chapters on positions and technique. So it looks at, they're in categories of like, do you want like deep penetration? Okay, try these. Do you want something more intimate? Try these. You want something lazy where you just want to lay there and get a blowjob and not really have to do much. There's positions for that. So I talk about that. And then as far as technique, the thing that I really like to talk about when I talk about blowjobs is, that's a sentence you don't get to say every day, is the frenulum. So the specific like penis anatomy, so that folks who want to pleasure a penis but don't necessarily want to gag or deep throat or do anything like that, that they know that there are pleasure areas at the end of the penis that are awesome.
Could you describe where the frenulum is for somebody who might not have a particular training around the anatomy and vocab?
Yeah, so if you're facing somebody who has a penis, and then that you put the penis facing north towards like their face, it's the underside. So it's the side that's going to kind of have like this little V shape at the tip, and it's kind of like in that area.
And that is a spot that's like just jam-packed with nerves.
Yes, I say the frenulum is your friend. It's all kinds of nerve-centric.
Is your friend. So when people come to you asking about blowjob technique, is the implication that they're just feeling like no sort of idea what to do, or like, I think I'm pretty good, but I want to get an A game. Like, I'm trying to get my face on a Wheaties box. Like, where are people on sexual technique?
For blowjobs in particular, and I do one of the in-home party classes that I do, Sex or Cider does, is and we actually teamed up for one once, actually, and she did the blowjob one and I did the female version, is specifically the women, often women are in the audiences, because I do a lot of bachelorette parties and things like that, is they're coming at it from a space of, I hate this. This is just, help me get through this as fast as possible. Like, aww, how can I, so they're coming from a very negative space. And so part of what I try and teach also in this book, The Sex Positions for Everybody, is that you can find a way for your body and your taste and your preferences to make sense of all this stuff and do what works for you. So if you like hate blowjobs, there's ways that the things that you hate about it, if you start to unpack it, you might not have to deal with. If one of them is gagging, okay, frenulum. If one of them is, you know, your neck hurting, here's some positions that can help with that. And so they might find that they don't actually hate the blowjob. They hate these things that they assume are part and parcel to the blowjob, but necessarily aren't, if that makes sense.
That makes me like immediately sad.
It is.
On one side, it's like, it's nice they're doing a thing they don't want to do. Like, I mean, not necessarily as a sexual thing, but I appreciate that people are doing things for their lovers just simply to give them pleasure. But like, that just makes me sad, because it feels like, you know, the messaging around oral sex is that it's some sort of favor, that it's some sort of obligation, that the giver of it shouldn't be expecting to derive joy from it. That just, exactly. That gives me a sad. Yeah. That gives me such a it's sad.
There was one class. This one class that I did. It was years and years ago now. It must be like 6 or 7 years ago, where one of the participants told me that at the beginning of the year, she'll give, I believe it was her husband, she's like, I'll give my husband a packet of 12 blowjob coupons. Now he can use them one a month, or he can use, like, have a really good week and a half, or he can spread them out how he sees fit. But when the 12 are done, they're done. And so we had a lot of conversations about how to find that balance between, if you really hate something and this is just a labor for you, like, that's not good. And I don't, you know, I feel bad, like, that person shouldn't really be doing that. But at the same time, the other side of like sexual generosity and how does that all work out in a relationship, there's not really an easy answer to that.
How, like, that is a question that is very common, especially in terms of like desire frequency level, that discrepancy of like one person wants it more in general than the other person, and not even necessarily like a specific axe, but, you know, the conversation I tend to try to have between them is like, okay, so what is it that you want? You just want to like get off a bunch of times? Because I mean, you can also do that on your own, but if it's about the intimacy, the connectedness with that particular partner, maybe there's another way to get that other than just requesting specific sexual acts happen more often than they do, because, you know, not everybody has the same desire level.
So that's a great way of framing it. Yes.
It's that chronic problem of conflict where people see it as, this is what I want, this is what you want, and then the only compromise is that we both don't get what we want. We get, like, partial.
And we're all miserable, so we're all happy. Yeah.
And the analogy I give is like, all right, so let's say like I want to live in New York and you want to live in LA. The solution is not to live in Kansas, you know, and just fucking split it down the middle. So instead it's about like, what is it about New York? What is it about LA? And then you figure out like, maybe there's some city that has those features, and maybe it's like Miami. And then everybody gets what they actually wanted, not just like what they are assuming is the only way they can get it.
That's such a great way of framing it. I love that, because one of the things that I find really, really troubling with the way that people will kind of get themselves into these ruts is that they think that there's one way to have sex. So like, you know, my partner wants to have sex 4 times a week and I want to have sex 1 time a week. So like you said, are we both going to be miserable and have it 2 or 3 times? But it's like, well, what do you mean by sex? Because P&V, thrusting, would, you know, nipple stimulation and cuddling and like dirty talking to do it. Like, you know what I mean? So that's kind of the stuff we're unpack. We're like, what is this? It's very hierarchical. How, you know, penile vaginal intercourse is like the, not to mention heteronormative, is the only type of sex that people really talk about in my world. And I deal a lot with like heterosexual women, so I should rephrase that. But so this book has one chapter on P&V sex positions, and the rest of the sex positions for everybody are kissing and are, you know, masturbation and are cuddling and massage. And there's a whole chapter on massage and, you know, trying to get people out of this very one squared box of it's sex, it's all or nothing. Mm-hmm. We're having sex or we're not having sex tonight. And that's going to be the way of it.
And it's a very setting yourself up for failure sort of model, because like, I'm sure that you go into this, like, not every body functions the same way. And I had a conversation with someone this last weekend whose parents, their sex life came to a halt after the father experienced prostate cancer, and the surgery meant that his erection, like, just was not going to be the way it had ever been before. And so they just stopped having sex entirely. And I was just like, oh, man, like, because to me, you just reframe the way that you're used to having sex, because you're just not going to have it the way that you used to. But that doesn't mean you can't still like pleasure each other and be intimate and be close and be physical and even learn to become orgasmic from other kinds of touch. But like, that doesn't occur to people.
It doesn't. Now, the dedication for this book is a great story, is for my grandmother. And she is somebody, she will tell me some wild stories. And she is very open about sexuality. And she talks to all types of people about sexuality, especially older women. Now, she's 73. And so she'll talk very candidly with older women who would never be talking normally about their sex lives. And one woman disclosed to her, oh, you know, my husband can't get an erection anymore, so I don't do that now. Like, we don't have sex. And my grandmother says to her, well, his tongue and his finger still work, don't they?
Yes.
And that's her way of saying, and I just love the way she's so blunt like that. But like, yes, you know, it's not just because one part, you can refigure out how to do the sex thing. There's many kinds of touch other than penises. As fun as they are, there's more to sex than that.
And it also sort of speaks to that not every body is the same. And so, like, we also need to have discussions around sexuality where the implication is not necessarily that everyone has full dexterity of their hands or the ability to hold these crazy positions for a long time, and that, you know, all those sort of things. Because I believe the way that it was phrased to me in a sex and disability class was like, at most, we are temporarily able-bodied, like at most. Right. So realistically, we should be learning these things, because even if we don't need them right now, we want to be working on these skills and this outlook and this perspective towards sexuality that's much more, you know, creative and adventurous and able to be sustained over the lifetime, because we're going to get older. I don't know if everybody knows that.
Yes, bodies change. And that's the other thing that I think a lot of times our public discussions around sexuality very much center on people in their 20s and 30s, maybe mostly late teens and 20s. And that's only one time of your, you know, even within one body, that body changes. And that's only one example. And as that body changes over time, it's kind of can become a different type of body with different ways it experiences pleasure and different desires and different abilities. Got to adapt.
So what is next on the trajectory for you? Like, what else are you thinking you want to do with your sex education career?
Well, aside from this museum, I'd love to one day get going. You know, I'm really focusing on, I got kind of like these multiple hats. I got the book route. I already got another book, last sequel to my first memoir, lined up. And then I'm really pushing my, you know, my local San Diego sex education classes. I got a Groupon running for that. So I'm really like pushing that. And this, my sex toy store online is starting to, I'm building this new website up, and that's looking good. So I kind of, you know, I got these different plates that I'm spinning, and and just trying to build the business.
You are an incredibly resourceful person. I remember the first time we talked, and when I found out how old you were the first time you opened your first like brick and mortar store, and I was like, I think I was just drinking a lot back then. That age.
So there was good and bad to that, I think. I was just like so naive, I didn't know what I had coming to me, which is probably for the best.
What have you learned? What have you learned about the business of sexuality?
You know, I would like to see personally a lot more collaboration with sex educators who are self-employed. I think there's a lot of competition. So I think I'm trying to bridge gaps, but I sometimes find hitting walls. So that's one thing I learned. I wish I earlier on would have got friendlier with other self-employed sex educators who are doing similar work. I've learned so much about the actual sex toy industry, what manufacturers to trust, which, you know, credit card processors are going to give you a problem, you know, ways to market and advertise on social media, ways you can't because they'll ban you. So that's a lot that I've learned for sure.
Yeah, that's a real thing. I can vouch for that. Yes, I've been in Facebook jail many a time. I've
definitely run into that too. It's a shame. It really, it's kind of like, you're proving my point of why we need this type of work. Why are you so afraid of a nipple?
Like, or the funniest one, the one that locked me out the longest, because I think it was for 3 days I was in Facebook jail for doing something that technically did not violate their standards. It was a shot taken from basically a dude was laying on his back and the shot was taken from up near his head looking down across his body. He had an erection. It was covered by something that's like basically a handkerchief sized object. So the erection's entirely covered. He's wearing more than would be expected of like a G-string, you know, or some kind of underwear like that. And on the handkerchief is drawn like a little ghosty face. So it's like the text was like, boo, you know, and it was just, it's just adorable. There's nothing violent or offensive or degrading or mean spirited about it in the least. And it was reported because it got shared a bunch of times because people thought it was adorable. And the more coverage you get of something, the more people that share it, the more likely you are to come across one person who has an issue with it. So 15,000 people share it, 30,000 people see it. You just need one. You just need one person to be like, I don't want to ever think about the existence of penises, because that's really all that is. It's not even a dick pic. It's like reminder that dicks exist. So I looked at the rules. I'm like, that's not actually even, you don't have a rule against covered erections. Like,
so how did you get out of Facebook jail?
Just enough time passed. Oh, it was one of those sort of things.
Probation.
Yeah. So it was like for 3 days I couldn't do anything. And I was just like, for real guys. Because the same day somebody I knew had posted a cartoon where it was a rape joke. Like it was absolutely a, you know, surprise sex rape joke. And I was like, what? And that's not going to get reported.
And that's the bane of my, I always report that stuff and then I'll get the Facebook notification saying, sorry, this does not violate our terms of service. And I'm like, so you can be violent, like sex as rape, as violence, as predatory is fine, but as fun, as cute, as clever. Nope.
Yeah. Ugh. Well, I mean, I'm sort of opposed to the idea of reporting it in general, unless it's like specifically violently abusive, like towards a particular person, just because I don't think Facebook has any fucking say in the content. I think that given that we are already providing them all of our information, we're already like they're getting their money. They're, like the argument it's a free site is complete nonsense. And I just think that like they need to come up with a safe for work 18 plus toggle, end of the story, and be done with it. And then we can interact with each other like real people.
That's true. But then it'll turn into like Facebook. I've been a first generation Facebook user really back since like 2005. And I remember Facebook was like this safety space of like, you can be an adult and you could say the stuff, the sexy things, because it's like this private little community of college students that you had to have a .edu email address to sign up for. And so like every time some space gets mainstreamed, like we try and find a new space where we can be creative and sex positive and be adults, and then that gets mainstreamed, and then it's like constantly this round and round we go. At one point it was Instagram, then Facebook bought that, and you know.
Yeah.
This is why we can't have nice things.
So speaking of Instagrams and Facebooks and all that kind of stuff, so people are going to want to learn more about you, learn more about like your work and the book, of course. So where can people find out more?
Absolutely. So I'm at thesexologist.org. The book is Sex Positions for Everybody. On Instagram, I'm sexdocjill, and it's for sale on Amazon. There's a Kindle, Barnes & Noble, all that good stuff.
And then just find you on all of the social medias?
All the social. Yeah, I'm sexdocjill pretty much everywhere. All
right.
Tumblr, all the things.
All of the things. So the folks on the West Coast can bring you in for a sexy party.
Yes, that's my favorite thing. That's where my heart is. So if anybody is in San Diego and wants to do the blowjob class like we talked about or any of the others, that would be super fun for me and you too.
And you can make friends with the frenulum.
Yes.
You're so delightful. Say hello to each other and hang out. It's a good time hanging out with the frenulum. Yeah.
It is.
Awesome. Well, thanks for finding time to talk to us again and catching us up on your life.
It's always good to talk to you, Dr. Timmery. Thanks for all the good work you're doing.
Oh, my pleasure. So we have been talking to Jill McDevitt, West Coast Realness, thesexologist.com. Thank you so much for joining us today, Jill.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah. And thank you, everyone, for listening, and have a fantastic day. Hey, friends and family of Sex with Timmery. We are so grateful to have your listenership. We have the coolest fans in the world. It's pretty much the best. And we hope that the love is mutual. If you are interested in supporting the Sex with Timmery media, either the website, the podcast, head on over to patreon.com/sexwithtimmery and become a supporter. For as little as $1 a month, you can be a regular supporter and continue to bring independent media that provides the kind of information that you want to have out in the world. Over here at Sex with Timmery, we have been doing this stuff for years. As you've noticed, we've got over 200 episodes. The Sex with Timmery website has been up since 2008. We've been giving you the goods for absolutely no cost, and we will continue to do so as long as we can. So thank you so much for your listenership, and we do hope that you will check it out. Patreon.com/sexwithtimmery. Hey, y'all. Feminist Apparel is an independent feminist clothing company based right here in Philadelphia. You can shop their amazing collection of sex-positive, consent-promoting, and just overall badass t-shirts, sweatshirts, baby onesies, and even more over at feministapparel.com. That's feminist, F-E-M-I-N-I-S-T, apparel, APPARELL.com. And since you know me, you can use the promo code SWT, like Sex with Timmery, at checkout and then save 15% off your order. So go check them out. They support us, so you should support them. Thank you for listening to Sex with Timmery. Sex with Timmery, the podcast, is produced by Nathan Karuna. Our opening music is by Charles Evans. Our closing music is by Hanya Lee. Be sure to check out sexwithtimmery.com, Sex with Timmery on Facebook, and tweet at me, Timmery_LEIGH. If you're a fan of the show, if you like it at all, a little bit maybe even, rate and review us on iTunes and tell your friends all about it. And thank you.